This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Monday, 22nd of May, 2023. We have a market that is pinned near the highs, as we point out here on slide two. But that despite the debt ceiling talks collapsing on Friday, there was a bit of a wobble. We saw some moves in the treasury market and dollar yen and the likes, but there does seem to be complacency on that issue that we will get to the other side of this without any major incidents. Pretty compressed schedule this week with the Senate not even in session until next Tuesday after the long Memorial Day weekend, and the House only meeting through Thursday this week. Plenty of open questions, plenty of forms the solution could take. My suspicion would be, and our suspicion would be, that it is a temporary solution that kicks the ball some months down the road, maybe makes an election year issue. We'll see. But for now, Peter, pretty much in a holding pattern, and we have that sort of divergence, ongoing narrowness in the market that we've discussed, with the NASDAQ still looking quite strong and pointing higher, while the S&P has sort of broken higher, but is sort of hesitating here just to be up that 4,200 area.
Yeah, and S&P 500 futures closed above that 4,200 level on Friday, where we had a little bit of a retreat. We have had positive sentiment out of Asia this morning. Japanese equities in particular, talk of the town. The TOPIX index, which is their equivalent of the S&P 500, is pushing to new highs. It's an extraordinary amount of momentum. We're up 15% now in Japanese equities. Extraordinary. And then I've looked at the Saxo theme basket's performance overview here, which you can see on slide two in today's slide deck. We're seeing a remarkable amount of pro-cyclical rallies last week. We talked about it, and it came on days with also higher interest rate or higher bond yields in the U.S. So I'm suggesting that the market is feeling a little bit more optimistic, I think, on the economy as a whole than maybe a lot of, the growing chorus of economists that are, betting or increasing the likelihood that the U.S. will slip into a recession in Q3. That's going to be increasingly be the focus point. Do we get there, or can we avoid it, basically? And I think that's going to be the major question. Well, I have very quickly highlight, semiconductors were up 8% in the past week. Our cybersecurity's basket up almost 5%. We've seen a long string of very strong results coming out from cybersecurity. It's really part of this massive trend about increasing defense spending. It is partially a bet on that. Bubble stocks, I think, is driven a lot by the AI hype, and that as well goes for the semiconductors basket. Maybe a little bit overextended here. You mentioned, John, as well, the NASDAQ 100 index is doing great. I agree with that. I think the focus point this week is whether the U.S. equity market, in particular the S&P 500, can we stay above that 4,200 level? What about the PCE results that we'll get on Friday? We also have the Chicago Fed National Activity Index coming this week. Going to be interesting to see whether that will continue to signal that the U.S. economy is being robust, and that figure will encapsulate the activity up until the end of April.
Yeah, and we've also pointed out, I mean, around this whole debt ceiling issue is not just whether it gets solved or not, but when it does get solved, regardless of the form it takes, you'll have the Treasury with its massive blitz of issuance. I think we titled one of our podcasts, Be Careful What You Wish For on the Debt Ceiling, and I think that could be the case. So there's that whole liquidity angle, Treasury, with $1 trillion of issuance, maybe $500 billion of net new issuance to expand, re-expand its holdings at the Fed and its sort of its account. Or reserves will be a liquidity pinch. So the market is just pretty complacent on that issue. Look at me. I'm maybe that could be behind some of the extension higher at the long end of the curve in U.S. Treasury yields. Look at that 30-year, for example. If it's starting to poke at that 4% level, quite interesting. And the 10-year also, it's a bit more range-bound still relative to the turmoil back in early March, but still 3.65% area is quite important there. And with longer or higher U.S. long Treasury yields, big surprise to see the Japanese yen quite weak, as I show in the overview on slide three. Dollar yen teasing above that resistance line around 138, and that was pulled back a bit by the turmoil on Friday with these debt ceiling talks collapsing. But that's, of course, the focus for the yen, the longer end of the yield curve. The dollar angle is a bit difficult, and I think the dollar will actually get a boost once we get to the other side of the debt ceiling. Again, on the dollar liquidity around Treasury issuance, Finally, on FX, interesting to see the Kiwi as strong as it has been. Aussie Kiwi breaking down to the lowest levels since December, below 106. On a RBNZ inflation expectation survey, year ahead, moving to 7.4% on inflation expectations versus 7.0% in Q1. This is a bit confusing because we had another New Zealand survey of inflation expectations that was actually below what was anticipated, and that actually saw a weaker Kiwi at that time. I think also weighing on the Aussie, to be fair, are some of the metals prices. But this is all interesting because we're heading into the RBNZ meeting this Wednesday. And I still believe that this is getting quite stretched, the Kiwi relative to the rest of the market. Although if they do confirm on the guidance that they're ready to hike another, let's say, 25 plus basis points after the hike anticipated this week, it does have the RBNZ rate pushing close to 6%. A remarkable divergence with Australia, for example. All right, let's head over to the commodity market. Ori, you're back online here. We're getting into the spring, well into the spring here. We have this big climate shift with the El Nino taking over from La Nina, and you've talked a little bit about that. But look at these grain prices. They're just really under pressure, particularly wheat.
Yeah, exactly. And if we look at the key crops, they're most certainly not telling us a story about the trouble that might be trouble lurking in the months ahead. We've seen multi-month low in corn and wheat prices last week, primarily driven by a very fierce competition from key exporters elsewhere. So corn is troubled by, or U.S. corn exporters are troubled by brisk export out of South America. And the wheat story is still the grain corridor that was extended for another couple of months last week, together with ample supplies coming out of Russia at a discounted price, also putting downward pressure on the wheat. But as you mentioned, John, the El Nino is coming back. And there was an article in one of the science papers over the weekend, basically highlighting that this could be that the global economy could take a $3 trillion hit from a returning El Nino. We're already seeing some extreme heat stress in Asia right now. We're seeing rice, sugar, and coffee prices being supported by that. And what is really key as we move deeper into 23 is whether we're going to see any impact across some of the big producing regions of key crops. And that's obviously especially North America, Northern Europe right now, and then later on South America. So it's with that in mind, it's difficult to envisage some much lower prices at this point in time. But again, it will probably take months before we really start to see a potential price supportive impact of these developments.
Yeah, and then as mentioned earlier, this longer end of the U.S. yield curve picking up higher, whether that's on the anticipation of this Treasury issuance or otherwise, that does impact gold. We saw a pretty decent correction in gold prices, found support, I suppose, at important levels. But what are the levels you're focusing on here for whether this correction becomes something more nefarious?
Well, it's most certainly that 1950 level, which I highlight as a green line. You can see there's quite a few previous peaks and also recent lows in that area come. So that's really where the battle is going to take place right now. But looking at some of the drivers, it's quite clear that we've had a period of dollar strength, broad dollar strength, that is. We're also seeing the yields moving higher, as you mentioned, John. So that's basically starting to unsettle a few longs in the market, and we saw some of that starting to unfold in the week to last Tuesday, where there was a 10% reduction in the net long, but it's still relatively elevated, as you can see on the top right hand side down slide 6. And so the risk, I think the biggest risk in the short term is basically whether the market's pricing out further potential for rate cuts this year. That could have a negative impact on gold, but again, that doesn't really tie up with the recession worries that we also mentioned that's starting to rise as we head into the second half of the year. So gold is holding quite well right now, but in the short term, probably still some a little bit of a nervousness in the market with the recent established longs.
All right, now let's. We had a G7, no huge secret, on Friday. It was a bit overshadowed by the whole situation around the debt ceiling talks in the U.S., but they're issuing a communique, which is largely as expected and was the spin coming into this G7, moving rhetorically against China's coercive, so-called coercive practices, and some have called debt diplomacy in developing countries, etc. And I can't imagine, Peter, that this Micron announcement of the U.S. chip maker Micron, this Micron announcement from China that after a cybersecurity review, that they're going to ban the, I think it wasn't a broad ban. It was for companies not to use, certain companies not to use Micron's chips. Anyway, timing wise, I think it had to do with most likely with this G7 meeting. What's your take on that?
Yeah, well, it adds to this tit for tat tactics from both the U.S. and China. I think there's one thing is the public signaling coming from both governments. I think internally in both China and the U.S. there is an acknowledgement that, of course, we should continue to trade, but we should limit ourselves to trading in things that not of security interest, and those parts of the economy that we deem as a national security interest, we will disentangle from each other. I think that is the overall agreement between these two countries. And you know, what we read out in the daily press, the headlines, is just noise around that. I think the trend is pretty clear, and that's where we're headed. I agree. So I think the Micron news here is a signaling. It's important from China to also signal that they're not just passively receiving all these bans on their companies from the US side, and they're doing something opposite. And I think it's, of course, when they signal that there's a security issue, that has been the case, and the anxiousness over you have seen in Europe and the US over Huawei, other Chinese technology companies, that you have these security backdoors, which are a problem. So it is what it is. There's a ban on some of the Micron technology chips. The revenue exposure around 15% to the mainland China and Hong Kong market. So I don't think it's something that is a big deal for Micron in the long run. I think their long run prospects will be fine with or without China. I think the growing markets for memory chips and semiconductors overall, as we continue on this arc of digitalization, also AI, etc., will continue to drive demand for Micron. We also had the earnings on Friday from Deere, put in the share price here on slide 7. Been coming back recently. We in a very long term range that it was established since the monster rally back in the days in around Q1 of 2021. So we have been in a sideways market for Deere for 2 years now, and this is a company that has benefited enormously from higher agricultural prices. I think it's an interesting company because it's not only selling agricultural machinery equipment, it's also been weaving data analytics and sensor chips into these machines increasingly. And it's actually quite a fascinating company. And I think that if you're betting on agricultural prices to have a stronger underlying drift than what we have seen in previous decades because of more volatile weather patterns, I think Deere is one way to express that view. If we go to slide 8, the earnings calendar is really getting thinner here these days, but we still have a couple of earnings that are worth watching. I'm highlighting Palo Alto Networks tomorrow. A lot of growth, as I said in the beginning of the podcast, in the semiconductor industry, cybersecurity industry, and you can see that as well with the little insert here on slide 8. Revenue growth expected to be plus 20% for the coming 4 quarters, so a lot of growth still observed here. And then on Wednesday, NVIDIA and Snowflake, part of the technology sector. NVIDIA obviously in focus because of the AI. Xiaomi on the Chinese consumer. I think that's an interesting thing to watch here. And then Thursday we'll have Costco on the U.S. consumer side of things, and then we have Medtronic, which is basically one of the largest companies in the medical device technology industry, if you want to call it that. So that's it.
And NVIDIA, that's a big one this week. So much focus on AI, and it's really interesting to see how they guide versus how, you know, the market feels like it's fairly priced the forward expectations for that related to AI. So a very interesting one this week. Then on the macro calendar, if you slide forward to slide 9, we have almost nothing on the day for today. And tomorrow we have the first of these preliminary PMIs, manufacturing and services. It's pretty much global, but the Eurozone gets a little bit more focus in terms of market reaction. Those are interesting. We have the 2, 5, and 7 year auctions, which are placed rather interesting, of course, with the debt ceiling debates ongoing. How do those perform? How do rates react to all of this? But I think it's just going to be a week that's dominated by debt ceiling headlines. So I think there'll be very sort of edgy market around all of that. Again, how much of a crunch time is June 1st, which is next Thursday? And how much can we dribble into June? And could we get to June 15th, which allows the tax payments to come in, which actually means we could punt to July? I don't have the answer to these questions, but we just need to get this issue squared away. But you can see other bits and pieces there on the calendar. The RBNZ is its own story this week on Wednesday. UK CPI will also be interesting on Wednesday. And then Friday's PC inflation, I think, is largely irrelevant unless it's a massive surprise, given the focus on debt ceiling, et cetera. So we'll take it one day at a time, of course, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.